Do you know your net worth? Or can you even list all your financial accounts? Believe it or not, most people can't. The problem is simple. When you don't track your finances, you leave hard-earned money on the table by overspending and undersaving. Monarch is the solution, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, you can link all your accounts to see a clear, complete picture of your financial health. With data visualizations and AI-driven insights, Monarch helps you spot patterns, cut wasteful spending, and make better financial decisions without ever touching a spreadsheet. Monarch more than pays for itself. In fact, users save over $200 a month on average. That's why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch the best budgeting app of 2025. Get 50% off your first year when you use code LISTEN at monarch.com.
That's monarch.com.
Promo code LISTEN. Monarch, the modern way to manage money.
Come on!
The strong, the powerful Greg Lewin has returned to Money Savage. Welcome back, Greg.
Thank you.
Excited to have you back on. Greg is an author. He is an advisor to large family offices. He is a speaker, founder of the Seeds to See Initiative. His new book, Long-Term Success for Part-Time Investors, is going to be available soon. I'm excited to have you back on, Greg. Tell us a little bit about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Sure. My life is sort of half investing, half charitable pursuits. I was a professional investor for 30 years with four or five different hedge funds and some of the most sophisticated funds on the street. I think investing is absolutely critical for people to build the lives they'd hope to build. And I think very few people do it well. And so the thing that I've been working on lately in this very, very, in my opinion, frightening and challenging environment is helping people become better investors. And I think most things that they read about that are just entirely baseless. I think that people really don't understand the fundamentals of how you get better at this and how you do it successfully. And hopefully the book is a little bit of a guide. It's different than a book, I guess, because I'm just giving it away. The idea is to get it in as many people's hands as possible and hopefully start some thoughtful conversations.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. So investing is critical. It's essential to being able to live, because we're probably never going to be able to save enough money to be able to stop working. Yet the way that we're doing it, the knowledge that we have about it is lacking horribly. That's a crappy situation.
It is. It's really bad. And the worst thing that's going on, and it was constructed over a bunch of years, it was constructed systematically. I'm not saying evil or good or anything like that. It's just the government has had a miss. They haven't thought it properly, and their strategies to help the economy in a couple of different difficult circumstances we've had over the last two decades has been to lower interest rates to a place where fixed income investing is no longer viable. And that's where most of us, when we're just dealing with our personal capital, go to survive. So the only assets left are really, really risky. Maybe not your house. Maybe you have two things. You have a house and you have investing. But investing used to be, the largest category of investing has always been bonds, institutionally and personally. And now it's not a rational place for anyone to ever be again for the foreseeable future. Long time. So that leaves only one place to go, and that's stocks. That's the entirety of the stock market. There's no other fundamental than that. That's the entirety of it. Everything else is noise. And so, but the problem with stock markets, when they get crowded and they get overvalued, they get super dangerous and they can do more harm than good. In the last 48 years, not a long time, there have been four times where major indexes have lost 50% or more. To give you a perspective of how difficult that is, if you lose 50% of your money once, it requires 9 years growing at 8% a year just to get back to even. So, and 8% is the long-term average return of the stock market. So one bad market, which we've had four of them in the last 48, not that long, every 10, 12 years. That's not a lifetime. That's imaginable for even young people. That's imaginable. And so if that's the only, if the only vehicle left is not the bonds, but it's the stock market, people better get a lot more savvy on how they deal with it.
This episode is brought to you by Money Alignment Academy. If you are looking for a financial wellness platform for your company, your organization, and your employees, check out moneyalignmentacademy.com or click on the link in the notes of the show.
So I started my professional career in 2001, in August of 2001, and then 9/11 happened. And that's, I assume, the one of the two events, the first event that you're talking about, that really started driving interest rates down. And I'm 42 years old. And so I, as an adult, have no practical or personal knowledge about the way that people used to invest. Tell me a little bit about, not that it's worthwhile, but just for people who are listening that don't have the personal experience, what would a bond investment used to look like?
Well, a bond investment for most of us, for the vast majority of us, was just simply a fixed return. So you buy a bond. It could be issued by the U.S. government as a treasury, or it could be issued as a company from a company, Microsoft, that just wants to raise capital to grow their business. But they basically issue a bond, and the bond could be anywhere from, you know, short of a year to 30 years. Most people don't go out there, but say 1 to 10 years in length. And in that 1 to 10 years, if you're dealing with a quality credit, you give them the money. At the end of that period, 1 to 10 years, you get your money back. And in between, they give you an interest rate yield, a dividend yield. And that yield, 1% generally. So when I began in the business, it was 1982. And in 1980, the 30-year topped at 18%. So literally, if you know, bad for a mortgage holder, because he was paying 18% right on his mortgage, pretty tough nut to swallow. Good for an investor if he just bought at a bond that yielded 15, 16, 17% and could have it for 30 years. Best thing that ever did, way better than stocks. It's phenomenal. But for the majority of the time, there were very responsible yields throughout my investment career that ranged in the short term for about 3%, 2 to 3% for 1 year bond. And for a 10-year bond, you could easily get 6, 7, 8 on a regular basis. Very sound returns, call it 5% a year. And if you then left it, the government market, and went to the corporate market, you can get even a little higher, because obviously a company, no matter what its quality, is a little riskier than hopefully the U.S. government is. So we had this alternative, and most people use this as sort of the ballast of the portfolio. And then if on the side they want to fool around with stocks or whatever else they're doing, you know, it's the smaller portion of the assets, while the majority of the assets is hopefully driving 5-6% on a without risk. It's yours. It's a guarantee. The whole guarantee is now gone, because the average yield of a 10-year globally is below 1%. That's a disaster. That doesn't even keep up with inflation. So if you buy a bond, you're functionally losing money. I think there's $23 trillion globally of bonds that have negative yields. I mean, people are actually giving somebody, a company, a government, something, a dollar, and the government and company is promising to give you 97 cents back. I mean, whatever. That's a crazy thing to do. Makes no sense. So we're in a very tough place, and it's going to be the equity world that people are going to have to survive. And that's like I just said, just keep in mind, we had 9/11, we had the financial crisis, we had the pandemic, we've had, before that, there were several things like the market crash, there was long-term capital, there was the agent contagion. I mean, we have big stuff happen pretty regularly, and just think of those numbers. You lose 50% once, it takes 9 years growing your money at 8% a year to get back to even. that could wipe out an entire decade of returns. And what, and that happened for a lot of people too, because one of the things that happened was the was back in 2000 was the tech crash, and the NASDAQ went down 85% in 2 years. That's enormous, because that's where everybody's money was. That was the first time around with the internet, and everybody was so excited about the prospect, which was a good prospect, but the valuations were silly. And as human beings, we're just not designed to function well in the stock market. It's not our gig. It's not our thing.
Our brains aren't.
I can go on if you want.
Yeah, it's so. What is the way forward? You obviously.
The way forward, it's a little bit, I apologize for cutting you off.
No,
I'm sorry.
Please.
The investing world, the cool thing about investing, and one of the reasons it's interested me for so long, is it's the only thing in life that resembles the complexity of life. Life is really hard for all of us. You know, you're young and you can't imagine that, like, making it to the end reasonably successfully, whatever that means. You're somewhat happy, you're taking care of yourselves, you're fed, you've got good health. That's a goal. That's ridiculous. You just assume that's like a genetic rite of passage, and it's not. The older you get, you realize how hard it is to, and how lucky you are that things have gone relatively well. It's a very difficult job, and the reason it's so difficult is because our life is all about the unexpected, right? If your job is going well, your health may suffer. If your job is going well and your health is going well, then maybe your wife or your child or your mother or you suffers, right? And we're constantly thrown these very big curveballs, and it happens a lot. And as human beings, we're not well equipped to do that. So what is interesting about the stock market is if you can hone yourself around this place, around this objective place where answers are clear. So if I asked you, what's the definition of a wealthy person or something, or a successful person, you'll jabber on for a while. Tough thing to examine.
Sure.
Unfortunately, in the stock market, if I say to you, what's the definition of a successful year? If by chance you were smart enough to be able to come up with a goal of 10%, say something like that, and you reach 10%, I could say success. It's over. You said you wanted 10. You got 10. You're a successful person this year. Terrific. But we're not organized that way. And so the stock market gives you an opportunity to hone your skills to not only help you live a better quality of life, because money unfortunately does relate to the quality of your life, but it also lets you live a better life because you develop skills that are useful throughout the complexity of your life. And that's what's so interesting to me. So, for instance, if we run on the premise that the key to success in the stock market is not handling the expected. We all kind of, what's so hard about that? I buy Microsoft. My big premise, I think it's going up. Let's just say that's all I figure. And it goes up. Not so hard, right? It's kind of easy. If the same premise, I buy Microsoft, the premise is always a little bit unsophisticated, but let's say my friend told me that everything's going great at Microsoft and he works there. Not a good premise. But if you use that, that would not be uncommon. You live in Seattle. I imagine that's not uncommon. And you buy it and you're down 20%. What do you do? Now that's the unexpected happen. And how do you work it? And the problem we have is that there's a couple of innate qualities to human beings that doesn't work well for human beings. First, we're all built to act quickly and decisively. Think of it as a survival thing, right? The lion is coming, we got to get out of the way. So that's the way the majority of our lives as beings has existed. So we're very good at quick decisions and fast decisions. Our brains, we don't have great memories. We're not actually that analytical. We are great pattern seekers. That's our thing. We see relationships and we respond to the relationship. You know, A plus B, C, I got it. That's how this works. Problem is when you're quick to react, that's how you build, and that's all about the biochemistry of our systems. We're very, very twitchy mentally, probably physically as well. And you're pattern seekers, and you put those two together, what happens is you generally jump to conclusions before the pattern's clear. Right? It makes a lot of sense, right? We've got this framework that if I'm talking to George, he's going to respond this way to what if I say that, and so I'll move in this direction. And if George all of a sudden looks at me and says, I don't want to talk about investing, I want to talk about, you know, the New York Knicks, I'm like, oh, okay, I don't know much about that. You know what I mean? I'm like, I'm screwed, you know, because you took me in a pattern that I didn't expect, and I jumped to the conclusion that I knew where you were going to take me. So when you make quick decisions and you leap to conclusions, what happens is, unfortunately, a lot of your conclusions are poor. And add to that, that based on the way global trends have happened, we've become easily bored. It's very hard for us to keep our attention, right? And we're distracted easily. That's just the nature of the whole phone life, right? You know, we're constantly waiting for bells and whistles to take us off track because we don't like staying on track. It's too boring. We got to get on a new track. We got to keep moving. So the whole thing converges to this design that is not well organized for the unexpected. And let me explain. I'll give you an example that'll take you maybe to the idea. There's an arc of human behavior. We're all about stories. From those stories, the way we make our stories come true is by forming expectations. And once we have these expectations, we build mindsets. And so what we become is very channeled. And what we see is what we expect to see. So let me give you an example. Two men, identical twins, they go into Times Square. They're standing in the middle. One guy, he was told by his friends that Times Square is the most beautiful place on earth. And so he stands in the middle of Times Square, and what does he see? The bright neon lights. He's ready. He's primed to enjoy the beauty of Times Square. The other twin, his friend said, Times Square is freaking dangerous. You better be careful. And he stands in the middle of Times Square, and he can't take his eyes off the sketchy dude across the street. Both facts, both truth, neither of them factual, because they walk in and they can only see what they expected to see. One guy can't see the sketchy dude, the next guy can't see the neon lights. Both are truths, but neither is true, because it is just a small piece. That's how we deal with problems. We have a mindset based on our expectations. We come on a narrow path, and we only can see the path. And what happens is we never, ever see the unexpected. And the unexpected is where all of performance takes place. That would be sort of the first half of the book. How do you do that?
Right.
That's what it is.
Yes.
How do you make yourself a little better at dealing with and becoming accustomed to dealing with the unexpected? And that's, you know, I have three remedies that I offer. Is it appropriate to talk about those now or?
I think we should definitely do it. Yeah.
So I apologize. I'm not letting you ask questions.
No, you're good.
So I hope this is not boring or off base or
this is great.
Not relevant.
Go.
Yeah, the three, I have one virtue, one tool, and one strategy. The virtue is patience. Obviously, we are built to act, built to do, built to stay busy, built to stay bored and impatient. So patience is a quality that allows you to, it gives you the breathing room to see beyond yourself, to pause and actually evaluate a problem with that is more complexity and grant it the due complexity it deserves. So it's talking about, you know, I hope through talking about these things, I teach people why they're important and give them some space to understand that. And that way they can maybe implement it. But patience is the virtue. You know, if you talk about like a guy like Warren Buffett, his whole game is just patience. I mean, one of his core little vignettes that he offers is that you should have a punch card and you're only allowed 20 investments in your entire life. And that's one of his things. He's been simply telling you, you've got to be patient. Mm-hmm. It's not actually that hard to find great stocks. It's really hard to wait for them. So patience is the first thing. The second thing is a really interesting thing that I've explored a lot of stuff in my life, alternative stuff that I like a lot. The most interesting and most possibly most therapeutic in a way thing that I've ever done is the simplest thing I've ever done. And it's called active listening. And it teaches you so many skills because, of course, if we are built to act, if we are impatient, if we are pattern seeking, we're in our own brains all the time, right? We're in ourselves. One of the weird things about human beings is we know other people far better than we know ourselves. And that's fact-based. We have an image of ourselves that we don't like to tarnish too much. And so it protects us from understanding who we are and what we really want. So when you can sit down and learn the pattern of active listening, where the only goal in the conversation is to hear the other person. It is not to come up with, you know, what do we do when we have a conversation? We're listening. Basically, it's almost a competitive dialogue. I'm waiting to figure out what you're going to say before you finish saying it so I can come up with the clever response before everybody else. That's what we all do. That's what we do. And so we shut down, right? What's the pattern? I got enough. I know what George is saying. I got the response. Shut down. Barely hear what you say after that, right? That why every time you go to a party, it's so impossible to remember what that guy's name is that you were just introduced to because you shut him down, right? You're on to the next thing. And so this whole pattern of active listening actually, I don't know what, it reprocesses the brain. It's almost like meditation. It's not meditation. It can be considered that, but what it is a strategy that takes a lot of work, very simple to explain, but it reprograms the way you process information and the way you interact with other people. So it's very, very powerful. And then the third thing is just, it's big, but it's very hard to do, is people have to learn to put more distance between them and their phone, because that thing is the tool that has taught you how to be bored, how to be unattentive, how to be distracted. And it's very, very hard for you to stay on task, on process. So I go through these three things to help set the template of how I think people can put themselves mentally in a better position to then be investors. And then the second half of the book is sharing very specific insights on how to find and invest in individual stocks, if that's what you choose. If you want to do index funds and stuff like that, I'll explain that as well in the book a little bit. So it's really, it's a how-to guide, but you'll never see people talk about investing. They'll just tell you what to do. Oh, you got to find a stock that generates cash and has good earnings and does this and does that. But if you're ill-equipped to do any of that, what's the point in all that advice? Nobody ever gives you advice on what you need to do to sit at your desk or wherever you are and start the process. And without that advice, everything else said after that is useless. And that's why everybody's ill-equipped.
I love it. Well, Greg, I certainly appreciate. I know that it's no small feat to actually write a book and the amount of time that it takes to do it and just everything. So I'm grateful. Where can people get a copy?
So I have to figure that out. I'm not very good at technology anymore. So my son is, but he's in California. I'm in Connecticut. So we'll figure something out. But I'm going to start releasing some excerpts on LinkedIn. So if you want to, however you connect with me on LinkedIn, I will connect with everybody. who sends me an invitation, I'll respond, and I'm going to have some excerpts. And then I've got to just figure out, I mean, I have a website and things. I don't use it very often. I used it for prior books that I wrote. But there'll be somewhere different than the others because I just don't want to. I think it's important right now, and I want people to have this. And it's not written like a regular book where it's got to be, you know, this length or else it's not publishable. Sure. And then you have to spend all this time marketing it. I don't want to do any of that. I really want it in people's hands. So whether it's putting it on my website or having people send me email, yeah, I'll give an email address if they want and they can get on a list. So maybe that's a good way of doing it. So, you know, I have Greg Lewin, one word, Greg Lewin, 1957, the year of my birth, at gmail.com. So if people want to send me their email, I will certainly put them on some kind of list. I haven't figured out how to get rid of the book, to disperse it. And, you know, I want it to be in a format where if you decide to pick it up and read it, that you can send it to as many people as you want. I'm not trying to protect anything or make money off of it. Got no plan for any of that. I just think it's an important thing right now. And I'd like people to read about it, read about the things that I think they need to do to build the kind of quality of life that's going to be hard to come by in the investment world that the governments of the entire world have set for us. It's just too hard.
I love it. Well, to be continued then. We will have you back on as soon as we figure out what that delivery mechanism is and maybe go a little bit deeper
into it. Yeah, that shouldn't be hard. Maybe it'll take a week, but you know, yeah. I'm sure somebody else will tell me, oh, you just do this, idiot, yeah, and I'll do
just,
it.
Just hit the button,
I
Greg.
Don't know. What's that?
You got to just hit this button.
Yeah, it'll be really simple. I just don't know it. No.
Yeah.
No. You know, my wife doesn't know it, so we've got to go to somebody who looks more like you than me.
I think that's great. I love it. Well, I don't want to forget, Greg, Savage Nation's ready for that difference-making tip. What do you have for them?
From an investment perspective, I'll say that the most important thing you can do is put your feet under the desk every day. You've just got to be persistent. You've got to stay with it. It's a very tough task, but it's really, really worthwhile.
Well, I think that is great stuff. That definitely gets come on. Greg, thank you so much for coming back on. Thank you so much for writing the book. What's the best way? We got the email address. What's the next best way for people to connect with you?
LinkedIn.
Excellent. Well, Savage Nation, if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Greg your appreciation and share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Shoot Greg an email and get on the list for when the book is released, and then you can find him on LinkedIn as well. I'll list both of those in the notes of the show. Thanks again, Greg.
Thank you. Good to see you, George.
Good to see you. And bye-bye. Until next time, keep fighting the good fight, because we are all in this together.
Thank you.